Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. We're live from the Clatchy Center on the campus of UWM, getting ready for day two of the Fresh Coast Classic. Here with my co-host each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Doctor, how are you today?
I'm doing great, man. I hope the fans can keep the crowd noise down. The place is packed.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, first game is until noon, so it'd be an early arriving fan base. Before we get going, you had a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, and you, I hope, as well. We had a great time. We had a huge family gathering.
Good for you.
Had my parents there with all the kids, all the grandkids, and it was awesome.
Perfect. I was at my sister's house, and a lot of family, and she puts on a great spread of food, and it's good to spend time with family.
Best holiday ever.
Yeah, you bet, except for that Packer game.
Well,
that was tough, man.
You know, that's the way it goes.
I see you're wearing the Brett
Favre
jersey.
I'm rocking the Favre jersey today.
That's awesome.
Because those of us who are really old like me remember how bad the Packers were before Favre.
Right.
And remember how awesome they've been since Favre. And it was great to see him come back to the family and see everybody cheering for him and just kind of get him back to being part of Packer Nation. Because he really, I mean, yeah, it was ugly at the end. But, man, I'll tell you, 16 years of every game, it was so fun to watch that guy.
He is back where he belongs.
He's back where he belongs.
When he was in the booth and they said, what's the closest you came to missing a game?
Yeah.
And he talked about his breaking his thumb.
Yeah.
And the fact that
on
he
his
got
throwing out, hand.
Right. And he came out and actually played pretty well.
Yeah.
Up in Minnesota in the Dome. And even he said he was a little surprised because he never played well there. But he broke his thumb on his throwing hand.
Yeah.
And played 7 days later.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
No,
the guy was absolutely unbelievable. I don't think you'll ever see that record by a quarterback broken, ever.
No.
It was just absolutely amazing. And, yeah, he had a broken thumb. He tore a ligament in his knee. He was back in 2 weeks playing with that. The guy was just absolutely ridiculous. And he was so much fun to watch. I think we've all kind of forgotten that in the haze of what happened. But I'm celebrating him today. I'm glad that he's back in Packer Nation. Hopefully people have moved on and let him be the great Packer that he was those years.
It's, you know, you can come home.
Yeah.
And you need,
yeah.
He needs to be home. Our special guest here at Courtside, Dr. Sean Tracy. Dr. Tracy, it's good to see you today.
Yeah, nice to see you guys too.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, yeah.
I bet you had a great Thanksgiving with your family.
I did. It was nice. We had a lot of family in town.
Man, that's awesome. You watched the Packer game as well?
Yeah, unfortunately. I watched it mainly for the Brett Favre thing, and it ended a little rough.
Guys, can we start with this? When Aaron Rodgers, that was a bad snap, he went back and then he came off, and I thought maybe he broke his arm. When you're a guy like me, you think the worst right away.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering what your thought was when you saw that play.
Well, when you see him go off and he's holding his arm, you think something terrible has happened.
Yes.
And when we saw the replay, I think those of us who do this kind of thing for a living were very relieved to see that he had been hit with a helmet directly in the area of the ulnar nerve, which is a big nerve. It's people call it the funny bone. That's what you whack when you hit it against something in a corner of a table or something. And it, you know, everybody has done that, and it hurts a lot. Well, he got hit like that, but with a helmet from a 320-pound dude. And so his whole hand, kind of that part of your hand that's innervated by that nerve, the whole thing depolarizes. What that means is the nerve discharges all of its electrical energy at once, and it's like getting an electrical shock there. And he didn't regain full function from it during the game, so that's why he was handing off awkwardly with his other hand, because he didn't have normal power. That nerve is responsible for the little muscles in between the fingers called the interosseous muscles, and they're responsible for grip power. And so he couldn't grip the ball normally.
Dr. Tracy, so when he stayed in the game, and when they're snapping him the ball and he doesn't have feeling in his left hand, that's got to be – so he's guiding that, then just utilizing his right hand to catch the snap, I would think.
You know, it's actually – he had partial feeling in the hand, because that nerve really it affects mainly your ring finger and your small finger. And so his thumb and his index finger, he would have had some sensation in those, and he would have been able to, like, move his thumb and done some things with his finger. So it's a very weird thing. It's kind of like half numb, half not. It's like when you go to the dentist, they numb up half your mouth. Half of it's working, half's not. So, yeah, it's a very unnerving – forgive the pun.
Well played, John. Well played.
Thing for him. But, Yeah, it's. I tell people if you've ever hit your funny bone, and you know, you feel that zing. He had that constantly for, like you said, the rest of the game. So yeah, it's a bruise to that nerve, and so it's a little difficult to say exactly how long it's going to last. The other thing is, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out with some sort of little padding there, because that's something that once you do it, it's more prone to happen again.
So he'll if he gets padding, it'll be on his. It'll be here, right in on inside of his arm.
Yeah, on the non-throwing elbow. If they do that, yeah,
it would likely be something soft. You know, like a soft sleeve or something.
Sure.
That would be over that area. That's what we often use for this problem. It's called ulnar neuritis in normal people. In this case, I would call it like a helmet neuritis. because it's like he got hit with a hammer there. I mean, literally, and I'm sort of making light of it. But I mean, anyone who's had a nerve injury like that knows how much it hurts. And obviously, this was going on for a while. And I'm not surprised he came back to play. And I think he'll be fine, probably.
But
Tracy is correct in the sense that when you have injury to the nerve, if there's bleeding around the nerve or in the nerve, it can take a while for that to completely resolve.
I was going to say, I think it would look bad if he went out with a little nerve injury when Brett Favre's sitting up there in the box,
you know,
looking at
him. I said, look, unless they carry him off, he's not coming out
of
this game.
I'll tell you something funny. I read this morning that the reporter who was there on the sidelines, apparently Favre said, give me 5 minutes, I'll loosen up.
You know what? I'm telling
he's
you.
Back. He's back. Like, no joke. He's seriously.
Can you imagine Scott Tolzien? He'd be like, are you kidding me?
Favre's coming out.
It's been retired for 15 minutes.
Pull that down again for another 5 years.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Hey, a couple other injuries in that game. Brian Bulaga went out, injury to his left ankle, and did not return. And offensive linemen seem to come back relatively quick on some things. I'm not sure how bad it was, but he didn't. I thought maybe he'd come back, but did not.
Yeah, again, this is, really sort of dodging a bullet because he's got this left knee that's been a real problem for him with the ACL, the meniscus, and so forth. And I think when he went down, people were very concerned that he had re-injured the knee. So it's not good to have an ankle injury, but it's better than that he destroyed his knee. So from what I read this morning, it sounded like he was going to go through normal ankle rehab. You know, ankles you can do a lot too. We're going to talk about this actually later, so I don't want to get too much into it now, but we're going to talk about it in basketball. It's a very common problem, but I suspect that they'll have him probably ready to go for the next game because they have a 10-day gap. So it's likely he'll play next time.
Our special guest today here again at courtside of the Kolache Center on the campus UWM is Dr. Sean Tracy. You can get information on Dr. Tracy, mymosh.com. If you want to tweet us any questions, hashtag SportsMedRadio, SportsMedRadio, and I can get those questions answered by Dr. Brian McCarty or Dr. Sean Tracy. The other injury in the Packer game that's concerning, cornerback Damaris Randall went out, and they're talking about a knee injury, and again, they haven't come out to say how severe it is, but he did not return.
Yeah, it's, you know, with these guys, a lot of times they won't say anything initially until they get the MRI. Once the MRI findings come out, then they'll give us a little bit more of a clue. At this point, we just really don't know. I mean, it could be just a small sprain, or it could be, you know, an ACL. So we just hope for the best.
You know, it's hard when you're a guy like me because you're never sure if they're telling you the truth on some of this stuff. And
well, I mean, we can only go based on what they're telling us too. Sometimes we're able to see the mechanism of what happened. You know, and so then we know kind of what happened because we've seen it so many times. So, like in the Lions game when that cornerback went down, and we knew right away the guy tore his ACL. I didn't need them to tell us that. But with the Randall injury, I didn't see the injury, so I really don't know what happened.
Can I ask you what in the Lions game that you knew immediately he tore his ACL? What happened on that play that you said, okay, that's what it is?
Well, he was backpedaling, suddenly changed direction.
Right.
So, sudden stop, change in direction, and the guy goes down in a heap. Is usually an ACL tear. I mean, the differential diagnosis, there are several things it could be, but that's the most likely one. You know, patellar dislocation's possibility, but ACL would be probably 90% of the time with that particular mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when you saw Jordy Nelson kind of stop and turn, and it's actually 70% of all ACLs are non-contact. It's that sort of deceleration shifting, and it just pops.
Tony Romo Burlington's own Tony Romo. You got to feel bad for him. It's been a tough year.
You know,
for this
I find myself in a funny position because I actually do kind of feel bad for him.
I do.
I hate Jerry Jones so much that it's hard for me to think anything good about the Cowboys, but I do feel bad for him just because he's getting, you know, he's 35 years old.
Right.
And he's trying to come back, and obviously he played terribly anyway, but his season is done.
It's done.
Yeah, he's
his
over.
Career might be done. Yeah. I you know, at 35, now he was out the first time with broken collarbone, and he broke the same collarbone.
Yeah. And that's the risk of going back at this stage. He went back 8 weeks, which is typical for that injury, but that is the risk that run.
That's why last year we were dealing with Rodgers, everybody was saying, well, you know, can he come back? Can he come back? Well, this is what they were trying to prevent, because then you break it again and then you're done. And it does. It, you know, the older you get, it takes a long time for this to heal. And this is a very physical sport. Yep. You know, this isn't going back to being an accountant. So,
you know, when you're looking at Randall Cobb as he tries to protect, you know, with his shoulder, and so he'll fall, and you can see that he's a different player as he's trying to protect that as a quarterback with a broken collarbone. You come back, there's no way that you're going to be able to protect that when somebody is rushing and there's a, you know, they've got a clean shot at you because they drive you into the ground, and there's no way that he's able to turn to try to avoid that. And, you know, as soon as he was laying there, you knew.
You know, it's very interesting, but most of these reactions that people say, well, why didn't he just fall on us, you know, something else? Most of these are actually completely out of your control. These are reflexes that occur, and they're not volitional. You don't get to decide. It just happens. So a lot of them, and that's how they happen so quickly, they never get to your brain. They actually come right out of the spinal cord. A lot of these reflexes, and we test them sometimes, especially in young kids, if there's any sort of developmental issue, you can test these reflexes, and they happen involuntarily. So, I mean, he's got a 300-pound guy landing on top of him, and he's
driving.
Just trying not to die. And, I mean, truly, I mean, it's funny to say, but it's kind of true. And he really had sort of the worst-case scenario. The guy landed right on top of the shoulder on the left side, just drove him right into the ground. And that's how he broke it in the first place. That's how Rodgers broke his.
Yeah.
And there's not much, really, that you could do differently on that one. Bad luck, honestly.
Bad luck. Hey, guys, we're going to get to a quick break. Before we do, I'm going to have to bring this up before you do, Dr. Brian.
So we
played pig out here on the court.
Oh, yeah, we did have a little basketball
competition. Yeah, well, I don't know if it was basketball. Because
I was surprised how good a shooter you are.
I can shoot regular shots. I'm not real good at trick shots.
You're a regular chucker out here.
I can chuck it.
Very impressive.
I can't play much defense, and I don't like to rebound, but just get me the ball in the corner, and I'll shoot it. So we're shooting around, and Dr. Brian says, let's play pig, and he did beat me. But he beat me with a shot from behind the backboard, a backward shot, and one that I've never seen before.
Hey, man.
The one behind.
The behind-the-back shot from the post.
And off the backboard.
If you can't make that shot,
I just
you
can't walked
play
away.
Me.
You know what that is in radio business? Drop the mic and walk off.
Michael did not actually attempt the shot.
Does that surprise you?
No. Kind of.
Are they going to take that Nerf hoop off the court?
No.
Before the stuff starts?
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't play because your hoop at home is 8.5
That's
feet.
Right.
You said, look
That's
how
right.
high this is.
Mike and I were dunking. You guys should have seen the dunk that we put down from the free throw
the
line.
The windmill.
That's what it was. But a behind the back shot to win is a pretty high class way to win pig.
Yeah, I'm shooting regular shots. I'm doing step off the backboard, regular shots. He's going behind the backboard. That's okay. You won. No worries. Guys, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to talk about common basketball injuries. Perfect time, Dr. Tracy, to have you in as we're here at the Kolache Center getting ready for day two of this tournament. And the Fresh Coast Classic had a great day yesterday. There's going to be certainly space for a first game at noon today. Runs all day. Come on down. If you can't get here, 12 o'clock, Bart Winkler and I will have the call of the game for the noon game. It's Milwaukee South Division against Wauwatosa West, followed by Racine Case and Milwaukee Morris Marshall. And we'll get to that later. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back in. We are live at the Klatchy Center, getting ready for day two of the Fresh Coast Classic Basketball Tournament. I'm Mike McGivern alongside Dr. Brian McCarty, Dr. Sean Tracy. You can check out their information at mymosh.com. If you've got a question that you want answered today, you can tweet us, hashtag SportsMedRadio. Guys, before we get into this, I mentioned that the tournament starts at noon, and we're going to be doing the first two games. But what happens at 3:15 is the Mega Drumline Showcase. Have you seen one of those,
no.
Dr. McCarty?
Mm-mm.
I didn't either until last year, and I thought, I'm not sure I want to stay for this. I couldn't get enough.
Really?
It was unbelievable. It was so cool, and it was kids that work really hard, and I had no idea how just hard it is and how cool it was to watch. And I sat there. In fact, last year we named Rufus King our team of the week, their drumline guys, because
very
they
cool.
were so good. That starts at 3:15. They've got a number of teams that are going to be competing in that. So if you get a chance to come down and see that live, I would highly recommend you doing that. Guys, let's start. We're going to talk about common basketball injuries, and we're going to start with the ankle. And as a guy who's now in his 34th year of coaching basketball, injuries, ankle injuries are the primary, I think, injuries that we see. We find that if you make kids brace, put a brace on or get taped up before practice or before a game, we've knock on wood had a lot of luck with staying away from any ankle injuries. But other coaches that I talk to, other coaches I know, Dr. McCarty, I'm just telling you, other coaches that I talk to see a lot of ankle injuries, whether they're severe or minor, and a lot of them either coming down wrong or the side of somebody's foot.
So one thing that's interesting about the taping versus bracing, I used to tape when I was younger, and now that I've looked at the research, the tape actually loosens up pretty quick and doesn't give you anywhere near the stability that a brace does. So when parents ask me, you know, if they should tape or brace, the nice thing about a lace-up brace is you can just retighten it. It loosens
right.
up a little bit, you retighten it, and I'll tell you, taking that tape off, especially for a guy, is not fun with pulling hair off. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically you're looking at 11% of the world's population's playing basketball now, which is amazing. That was actually in 2006. So this is data from FIBA, which is the International Federation of Basketball. So it's probably even higher than that now. So you have 11% of the population playing, about 40% of the injuries are to the ankle. The reason I was sort of making a face when you said that is that there are coaches who mandate that people brace ankles. And the trouble and the reason that I was making a face is that they don't understand that that transfers load to the knee. So you have higher injuries to the knee then. So ankle bracing and taping, as Dr. Tracy and I were talking about before, and we'll get into the nature of the injury first, is really an effective strategy if you have an unstable ankle. If you have a normal ankle, you're better off leaving it alone, because if you start bracing it, you have a higher incidence of knee injury.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's great. You know, you prevent an ankle injury, but relatively speaking, the knee injuries are more severe. So this data comes primarily out of volleyball literature, where a lot of coaches try to get all their teams to brace their ankles because they have all these ankle injuries. But then they see higher incidence of ACL injuries and severe knee injuries. So if you had to take your pick, you'd take a couple ankle sprains.
Right.
But when you've had an ankle injury and you have a recurrent ankle sprain, well, then it's a different situation. Now you're protecting that problem with an ankle brace, and that's a reasonable thing to do.
Dr. Tracy, you know, we as coaches always try to recommend different shoes, high tops or you try to stay away from anybody wearing low tops, at least we do. Difference in high tops as far as protecting the ankle?
You know, I remember when I was in high school, the Reebok pump was the big thing, and everybody was talking about you pump the shoe up,
right.
And it's gonna and that's all been debunked. There's some research out there that says it really doesn't matter all that much as far as what type of shoe you wear, especially within high tops. I mean, high tops are definitely preferred. If you have a real thick sole on a low top shoe, it kind of puts the foot up a little bit higher and can give you a little bit more instability. But most of these things are, you know, kids, it's, you know, guard going through the middle, trying, he's doing a layup, coming down on someone's ankle, and such high force that just the material from a high top isn't going to be really enough to prevent that.
Yeah, supposedly it doesn't make much difference in terms of the shoe wear. If you look statistically, you look at the data from thousands of people, apparently it doesn't make much difference. You know, we always thought it did when I was playing. We thought high tops were helpful. But apparently when you look at, you know, and we tend to be scientific thinkers, if you look at actual numbers, there's not a significant difference. You know, earlier today we talked a little bit about reflex arcs, right? The reflex arcs are incredibly important in the ankle. So in the ankle, your lateral ankle ligaments actually act like sensors. And so when they stretch, they send an impulse to your spinal cord that causes firing of the muscles on the outside of your ankle to protect it. And why is that important? It's important for two reasons. A, it's really cool. And B, it is cool. And B, if you tear your ankle ligaments and they're a little loose, they don't do that anymore. And so that's why when you have recurrent ankle sprains, it's very helpful to come see an orthopedic surgeon so you can get a diagnosis, so you know how severe it is, so you know, do you need a brace, do you need some physical therapy. The therapist can help you to retrain your ankle to do that again, right? But if you stretch those ligaments, it's like having sensors that no longer work. So when you land, that's why people who sprain it, resprain it, and resprain it, and resprain it, right? So it's very important to understand how that all works. Most sprains, they'll tighten back up again, they heal, and then when they tighten, you retrain the ligaments to fire, you get what's called proprioception or balance, and then you protect yourself again.
Dr. Tracy, they at least, I don't know if this is a myth, but people would say, you know, it's better to break your ankle than it is to have a severe sprain. And I'm wondering if that, again, this is stuff that in the circles I run in, coaches say, look, I'd much prefer this kid to break his ankle. He seems to be able to come back a little quicker and stronger than if he severely sprains it. It seems to take longer.
You know, that's one of those things that sounds great. You know, it's sort of a conventional wisdom. But when you're talking to an orthopedic surgeon, we really break that down. What you know, if you break the bone, but it's broken into the joint and it affects the cartilage, you know, that's a very bad injury that can lead to arthritis later in life. That might be something you never really come back from. You know, as far as a sprain goes, it depends how bad of a sprain.
Right.
You know, there's the kind of sprain when you're out playing with your buddies and you kind of roll your ankle a little bit, you limp it off, you yell, and then you're back out on the court and you're fine. That's a grade one sprain, just a little stretch. That it can go all the way to where you tear all the ligaments in the ankle and tear the ligament, the high ankle sprain, tear the ligament that goes up in between the tibia and the fibula, the two bones. Well, then that's a very significant injury. That could require surgery to put those bones back in place. And so it doesn't really mean anything to us when you say, well, it's better to break it than sprain it. What kind of break? What kind of sprain? So, yeah, it's better, I guess, to have a little easy break in the bone than to have a horrible sprain, sure.
Hey, does it surprise you guys that more NBA players don't come down on the side of somebody's foot because there's such big athletes, and when they're shooting and the defense comes in, it always surprises me that guys don't do that more often.
Well, you know, that's a rule. That's a rule. You're not allowed to do that.
Right.
And they did that specifically for that reason. So guys used to crowd the landing zone, and so guys would go up for a jump shot, and the guy would come underneath him. That's a foul. And so a lot of people don't understand that.
They still do it.
Well, they do it sometimes, but they really don't do it as often. I mean, this was a big issue like a year and a half ago or something. Kobe Bryant went up at the end of the game, and he took a shot, and the guy kind of crowded, and they called a foul. And everybody's like, what? You never touched the guy. Well, he didn't touch him, but he got into that space, and then he landed on him. That in the NBA is a foul. And the reason they put that rule in is exactly what you're talking about. So, you know, what's really interesting about those guys is they're just so incredibly well-conditioned athletes. They do land on people all the time, and most of the time they get away with it. But you know, sometimes, you know, if as Dr. Tracy mentioned a minute ago, if you land on somebody's shoe and you see that ankle roll in, I mean, there's nothing much you can do about
right.
it. And that's how the most of these injuries are inversion sprains. Inversion, just so people know, is like if you took the bottom of your foot and rolled it inward, that's what we call inversion. The eversion sprain is less common. That's when it goes outward. And that's where you often, as Dr. Tracy was just mentioning, it's where you often get that high ankle sprain that everybody says, oh, no, it's a high ankle sprain. And there, again, one of the most important things that Dr. Tracy just brought up is this idea of the overlap. There's overlap in severity of injury. And that's where this mythology comes about. It's better to break it than sprain it. Because a really, really severe sprain, you tear three ligaments on the outside of your ankle and the capsule of the joint. Sometimes you injure the cartilage in the joint. Maybe you dislocate the joint. And that's a terrible injury, and it can take many months to recover, whereas a simple crack sometimes will heal in 8 weeks, and you'll be able to play.
Boy, you can't. I can't wait for the next time I'm with a bunch of coaches in that set, because I'm gonna say, hold on.
I hope you remember all this. Keep that in your headset.
No, what I'm going to say is, hold on, let me call Dr. Brian McCarty or Dr. Sean Tracy, and you guys need to talk to them. Our special guest for the entire hour today, Dr. Sean Tracy. Again, check out information on him at MyMosh.com. We are live from the Clatchy Center getting ready for day two, Fresh Coast Classic. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. We're live from the Clatchy Center getting ready for day two of the Fresh Coast Basketball Classic. Tips off at noon today. If you can't get down here, stay on 1250 at 105.7 FM, The Fan. We'll get you the Milwaukee South Wauwatosa West game, Milwaukee Morris Marshall and Racine Case. Bart Winkler and I will get you the call of the game. It should be fun. Our special guest, Dr. Brian McCarty, my co-host, our special guest, Dr. Sean Tracy. Check out their information, mymosh.com. We're talking about common basketball injuries. We talked about ankles last segment. We're going to move over to the knee at this point. And some of the things that, you know, people certainly fear, I think, the knee more than anything else, Dr. Tracy.
Yeah, that's a dreaded knee injury. Like we were saying, whenever you see an athlete go down on a field, you like to see them, the trainers looking at the ankle instead of the knee. I always feel a little bit better. But the problem with the knee is, you start to worry about ligament injuries. And everybody knows, you tear a ligament, especially an ACL, it's 6 months, 7 months, 8 months to get back. One of the problems with basketball is there's so much cutting, stopping, starting. You know, it's a lot of force on the knee. One of the things we were discussing off the air is how these injuries are more common in females than in males in general. Not that males don't get them, but females are a little bit more prone to these. And why is that? There's a lot of different theories. But one of the things that's really been looked at, they've actually done studies where they do slow motion. They have girls run and cut or come down from a jump, and their knee tends to buckle in more and puts it in what we call a valgus position, where the knee's in, the ankle's out, and that puts the ACL at risk. And so if a female is coming down from a layup and she lands and the knee is sort of inward, it'll put stress right on that ACL and puts it at a great risk to tear.
You know, when you're talking about knee injuries and your hope as a coach is it's not the dreaded ACL, it's a meniscus, you feel like, you know, there's some hope to it. We had talked yesterday and earlier today, we had a young man at practice. If you go from your kneecap straight down, just, I don't know, 3 inches or so, and there's a bone right there, and he heard something pop there, and I called you immediately because my fear was that, it was something that could last for a while, and we're still not sure exactly what it is, but you had an idea.
Well, we have a pretty good idea what it may be. And, you know, the young man you're talking about is very tall, and he's just at the end of his growth period at that part of his body. So at the knee, shutting down growth plates, usually around 14 or so, 15, maybe even up to 16 or 17, but most of the knees are closed about that time. That's when they're most vulnerable to injury. So there's a condition that we hear about all the time called Osgood-Schlatter's, which sounds like some sort of terminal cancer or something,
right.
But it's actually just named after two guys who described this condition a long time ago. And it's a pain right at the top of the shin, right where the patellar tendon inserts to the bone there. And some people who grow very rapidly will expand the growth plate there, and they can actually pop the growth plate. Now, we don't know for sure that's what he did, but that would be a concern.
Right.
So Osgood-Schlatter's itself stops when people stop growing. So when they stop growing, the growth plate fuses together, and people generally, their symptoms resolve.
We've learned, I think, a lot from that. When I was a freshman in high school a long time ago, went to Milwaukee Tech, went out for the basketball team, made the team. At that point is when we had to get a physical, and I had that. Mm-hmm. And they shut me down for, 6 months. Couldn't play CYO. They wouldn't allow me to play at Tech. And now it's, you can play.
You sure
that
wasn't a coach's decision, was it?
No, I made the. No. You saw me shoot. I
can't. I'm just kidding.
Can't shoot from behind the backboard.
I'll tell you, for people who aren't here, Mike can shoot the lights out.
Can shoot the lights out.
Can't beat me a pig, but he's a very good shooter.
Oh, man. That's rough.
In any case, what you're trying to say is that treatments have changed. Did they put you in a cast in those days? Because a lot of times they did.
They didn't, and they said I couldn't ride a bike. I couldn't.
Yeah.
It was 6 months of literally nothing.
Well, as Dr. Tracy well knows, those of us who've come through sports training programs over the last, 20 years or so, things changed a lot.
Yes.
And now our understanding has changed. And I'm sure 20 years hence it'll be even better. But now, we encourage for patients who are symptomatic, having a lot of pain there, a period of relative rest. So in the most severe cases, which I see occasionally, we'll put people in an immobilizer for a couple of weeks at the most. That's very rare. Most of the time you're putting them on a bike for a while, letting them keep their muscles going, getting hamstring stretching, because that's always a problem with Osgood Schlatter's, and then letting the thing quiet down and then getting back to activities. But there, it's like we just talked about with ankle sprains. There's a spectrum.
Right.
Right.
That's the part as coaches, because we don't go through medical college, we don't know this.
Yeah.
We go right away to the most severe and then hope it's the least severe because we just want to be able, these kids to be able to play. When is it important to get them to come to see you? At what process, if they tweak their knee and they think they've just tweaked it and they're limping a little bit but they feel like they might be okay, when do we come to see you guys to make sure?
That's a good question. And every kid's a little bit different. That's where you got to know the kid too, as a coach and as parents. There's some kids that tweak their knee every practice, and there's always, they miss a jump shot and they tweak their knee, and usually
wow.
You've
watched us practice.
Yeah, exactly. usually let them kind of. That run its course, but
yes.
But right. If you see swelling, that's one of those things. You never should have swelling in a kid's knee. I mean, that's a sure sign that something is damaged, something's torn. If you're unable to bear weight, that's another obvious thing. If you've done ice and Advil for 3 to 4 to 5 days after a traumatic injury and it's still really bothering you, come on in. With these chronic things, if you've tried, once again, some relative rest, some ice Advil, and it's a week or two, I usually say that's a good time to come in just to look, because a lot of times people think, well, yeah, I know what this is. This is Osgood Schlatter's, and you come in and it's really not. It's something, it's a partial tear of the patellar tendon. It's something more serious. So it's a little bit difficult to just, blow it off and say, well, my neighbor had this. That's what it is.
Right. I would echo that completely. The swelling, limping, difficulty with participation. Kids want to play sports, so if they're not going out there, there's a reason. So you just don't blow it off. And the most important thing for people to realize is that our interests and their interests and the parents' interests and the coaches' interests are actually all the same. What we want is we want to get the athlete back out on the court or on the field as quickly as possible, but safely. And the advantage is if you come to see one of us, we can get you a diagnosis. And if you have a diagnosis, then you know how long things should take and what steps you should take to minimize future damage.
It's interesting, too, because as coaches, we want – we're not always on the same page with parents. We have parents that say he's going to be fine, just let him rest for a day, and then he's going to be fine and get him back out there. But we see him at practice every day. The parent's not there every day. So he's dragging that leg, and he's not able to explode off the leg, and he's not able to get up and down the court, 4 and 5 days later, where they're saying, don't worry about it, he's fine. We have to make that decision, and we have to make sure that we talk to the parent to say, look, we need to get him in to get looked at.
Well, it's difficult for parents, isn't it? Because let's just face facts. The facts are it's expensive.
Yes.
And so parents are reluctant when they have a huge $5,000 deductible and they're going to be paying all this money. They're reluctant to have to go in, and I totally understand that. That's why we have athletic trainers at many of the schools that help to guide that treatment. And we try very hard to do all these treatments without having people have to come in. But at a certain point, if a kid's limping around, the coach has to say, you can't play. You can't play until you get this checked. I mean, if that's the situation, then the coach and the trainer have to take that stance.
Hey, we're going to get to a break. Before we do that, the last break, Russ Thomas from MPS came down and thanked you guys.
Yeah.
And thanked Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine for what you guys do for the city of Milwaukee and MPS. And I thought that was really cool, you know, for him to make a special trip down here, because you guys are giving back. And you guys are doing a great job for MPS. So he made sure they came down and shook your hands and said thank you. And I don't know if everybody knows, but now every MPS game there's an athletic trainer. And they didn't have that before. Yeah. And I talked to her when we did the Channel 24 game of the week. And she said, you know, they're not yet totally comfortable with me being here because they're used to taping their own ankles or they're used to doing all this, and so they just got to just allow me in and let me do my deal, and they'll get there. But wanted to make sure that people understand that Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine doing a great job with MPS.
Well,
great partnership.
Thanks for very much. I mean, our goal is, we have a mission to make sure that we are delivering a high quality program for all athletes, and the MPS schools didn't have access to trainers, and we feel like that's a giant void, and so we're happy to contribute to that. And it's great to see Russ and kind of see that people are appreciating the work, frankly, that mostly the trainers are doing to help with that. So we're supplying the resources, but they're doing the work, and the athletes hopefully are benefiting from that.
Hey, we'll get to a break. Our special guest today, he's Dr. Sean Tracy, and he is chomping at the bit. Get out of here, go watch some soccer. What was the score of your son's game?
20-2.
20-2 on the good side.
On the good side.
On the good side. Hey, let's get to a break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. We're live courtside at the Clatchy Center on the campus of UWM getting ready for day two of the Fresh Coast Classic. Good games today. Come on down. They tip off at noon. If you can't get here, stay in this station. Bart Winkler and I will get you the call of the game. Milwaukee South Division against Wauwatosa West. Milwaukee Morris Marshall versus Racine Case will follow. And then at 3:15, the Mega Drumline Showcase.
That sounds awesome.
If you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen one, you need to come down and see it.
It's a little exciting. We got Riverside out here practicing right now, and they're moving like I always imagined that I would move and never did.
nor do now for that.
No,
matter.
Nor do now.
Dr. Brian McCarty is my co-host. Dr. Sean Tracy, he has been kind enough to come on over for the hour. Guys, we've talked about ankles and we've talked about knees. When it comes to common basketball injuries, I want to talk about hands. And look, as a coach, I see it a lot where guys are either with a pass where it pops, you know, your finger, or you're going up for a rebound, or you're going to make a steal, and you jam your hand jam a finger on somebody's ankle or somebody's kneecap, excuse me, and we're constantly popping it back out. A lot of hand injuries.
Yeah, and that's one of the toughest injuries to know. I see a lot of those late where, you know, it's 3 weeks out and the knuckle's still swollen, and an athlete's parents bring them in, and sure enough, there's a fracture there. A lot of times it doesn't change the course of treatment, but there's a couple things to look for. If when you're trying to make a fist, if you can't make a fist down and one of the fingers seems like it's kind of twisted to the side, that's definitely something that you want to come in and get seen for. That's indicating that you not only broke the bone, but that's twisted in a bad spot and it's going to heal in a bad spot. Another thing is if you notice the tip of your finger kind of sags down and you can't straighten it up all the way, it's called a jersey finger, a mallet finger. It's when it gets hit, the tendon that attaches, that straightens the finger, actually tears off. And that's important because it unless you get it back into place and hold it there, it's not going to heal. It'll heal with the finger down, and then that's annoying when you're trying to put on gloves and things like that. So those are two of the common things. You know, a lot of times it's tough to tell with knuckles. They'll swell up quite a bit. You know, I say it's real easy. If you have any question, come in. An X-ray is real easy to get.
You know, and we talk about hands, and we talk about, well, just tape it. It's fine, or pop it out, as we do, you know, and there are times that works and it comes back and kids able to get back into play, or the taping it of with the finger next to it to keep it straight, and depending if they're right-handed or left-handed. And I don't know if we take hand injuries as serious as we do the knee or the ankle, because we think, you know what, you're going to be fine. You've got, you know, four other fingers or three other fingers and a thumb. Yeah. Just go ahead and play.
It's just your hand.
It's just your hand. But you know what? You end up with that Larry McCarron type finger. You know, if you've seen that.
Yeah, we're talking about is what Dr. Tracy touched on, is that there are certain structures you can injure in a finger that can lead to deformity later on. And some of those deformities are quite problematic. And most of them can be avoided completely if you know what you've injured. So
right. This
is why we have athletic trainers. This is why we exist, and we have colleagues who specialize in hand injuries. If we see anything and we're not 100% certain it's going to be okay, then we have one of our hand colleagues check to see and make sure that everything's going to be fine. And as Dr. Tracy said, a lot of the time you put a splint on for a while and everything's fine, or as you mentioned, you can buddy tape fingers together.
Right.
That means you tape one to the next one. But if there's any twisting or rotation to the finger, that's not going to get better. And so those are the types of things that you have to get in for. The other area that we see a lot in basketball are these face injuries and head injuries. And so, you know, we saw, I think it was Russell Westbrook last year with a facial fracture. And that happens, right, because you can bash into other people and hit them in the head. And again, it's the kind of thing, most of them are just bruises and so forth. But you saw in his case, he had a big indentation in his face.
Right.
And I'm laughing because it's funny now. But I mean, they actually put a little plate to fix the zygoma bone, which is one of the bones in the face. And that's not something that Dr. Tracy and I do, but we certainly can diagnose that and get you to somebody
not
who
our,
can do that.
Not our bone.
It's not our thing.
But I'm bummed. Hey, eye injuries as well. You know, a lot of poked, you get a finger in the eye. And the cheek with the, you know, somebody swinging their elbows and you get caught with that.
Yep.
Also, I've had kids that have broken their nose. The worst for me was I was at Dominican and the kid went for a loose ball and the kid got him right in the mouth. And he came off and he said, am I okay? And his two front teeth were gone. I mean, they had to go right in half. And I said, no, you're actually not. We got a dentist that would see him that night and took care of that whole thing. So a lot of common, maybe not common, but a lot of injuries in basketball, different than football, Dr. Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in football you have a helmet on, so it gets, you know, you don't see as many facial fractures. You're wearing a mouth guard in football,
right,
which more people are in basketball, and that actually really does help prevent those injuries, like you were saying, cuts in the mouth, you know, teeth knocked out, especially by flying elbows. So more and more kids are wearing mouth guards.
Yeah,
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's actually something that you see more and more recently. And when I was reading about it this morning, it's a big injury prevention device.
Yeah.
There are fewer dental injuries and fewer facial injuries and concussions because of the mouth guard.
You know, and you see a guy like Steph Curry wearing it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he bites it most of the time, but when he's playing, he's got it in.
Yeah, and look at how well he shoots. It probably helps his shooting.
If I would have had that in today when we played Pig, I would have beaten
Maybe
I'm
that's what
you,
the problem
that's
was.
That's what it was. Yeah. I should have gone to my car and got that mouth guard. Guys, thank you so much. Dr. Tracy, you got a lot of games to go to today?
Actually, no. I got three more tomorrow, though. I had three yesterday, one today, and three tomorrow.
Man, oh, man. Where are they being played?
These are going to be at Brookfield Indoor.
Good for you.
Is that a Midwest Orthopedic? Brookfield
yes, it
Indoor?
Is. Yeah, yeah. It's right. Yeah.
We sponsor that place, too.
Yep. That's a beautiful facility.
You know, it's really fun for us to be able to share the influence of the program through the community, and it's the most rewarding thing, I think, is when people get treatment they wouldn't otherwise have gotten through that. So,
well, you guys, as Russell Thomas from MPS said, you guys give an awful lot back to the community, so thank you for
that.
Well,
thank you for helping us to let everybody know about it. So it's been a lot of fun.
You bet. Have a great day, guys. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.